This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, we're hosting a tribute to Steve Mooring. Steve was a pioneer in permaculture action and education. He's one of the founders of Sustainability Action Network and a tireless champion for community education and engagement. Listen or call into the show tonight to share a story about our late friend, mentor, and teacher, 816-931-5534. But first, I'm naturally with your headline news. MSN.com reports on Tuesday, NOAA released its latest annual Arctic report card, which analyzes the state of the frozen ocean at the top of our world. Overall, it's not good. Quote, the Arctic is going through the most unprecedented transition in human history. This year's observations confirm that the Arctic shows no signs of returning to the reliably frozen state it was in just a decade ago, end quote. Jeremy Mathis, director of NOAA's Arctic Research Program, said at a press conference. The report compiles trends that scientists have been seeing for years. The Arctic is warming at twice the rate of the rest of the world. And 2017 saw a new record low for the maximum sea ice extent, i.e. how much of the Arctic Ocean freezes in the coldest depths of winter. Scientists have seen, quote, the largest magnitude decline in sea ice and the greatest sustained rate in sea ice decline in that 1,500-year record, end quote, said Emily Osborne, the NOAA scientist who compiled the data for the chart. Quote, this was the third straight year of a record low winter maximum, end quote, the report concludes. EcoWatch.com reports, the head of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency pledged that lead regulations will be a prominent feature of the agency's work in 2018, but that work will take longer than anticipated. The agency expects that a revision of federal rules that are designed to reduce the risk of lead in drinking water will be published in draft form in August 2018, a seven-month delay from a timetable announced this summer. A final rule is not expected until February 2020. This is the second time that the Trump administration has delayed the rule's publication. The Trump administration violated the law by withholding funds from an Energy Department program that supported research and development of advanced energy technologies, the Government Accountability Office reported on Tuesday. Although the administration has since released the funds, which were part of the fiscal 2017 budget, the report stokes fears that the administration could use the tactic again to target important energy and environmental programs. The Trump administration's opposition to a federal loan guarantee program could damage efforts to commercialize cutting-edge energy technologies. In the past, loan programs have aided the development of Tesla's electric vehicles, Ford's push for engine efficiency, and renewable energy storage. It also supported five initial utility-scale solar projects, allowing them to gain investor confidence and go on to fund 43 similar-sized solar projects independent of federal loan support. There are dozens of other projects awaiting approval. And finally, a new study published in the journal Science Advances has concluded that babies born within 2 miles of sites of fracking for natural gas in Pennsylvania's Marcellus Shale Basin are more likely to have low birth weights. The study points to other research which has concluded that low birth weight can lead to, at worst, infant mortality, but also attention deficit ADHD, asthma, lower test scores, lower schooling attainment, and lower earnings, among other things. What the study does not do, however, is pinpoint what aspect of the drilling procedure is actually causing these health impacts. Lead author Janet Curry, a professor of economics and public affairs at Princeton University, told Inside Climate News that a necessary follow-up study would include air monitoring at fracking sites. That's all for the news.
Thank you very much, Natural E. I do have one other story. I don't know that you touched on this, but I just saw that hundreds of water protectors have blocked the gates at the site of Puget Sound Energy at the port of Tacoma. And this is news just as of 6 hours ago. It's a video posted on Eco Radio's Facebook page. So
I'm glad you said it, Mike.
Yeah. Okay. And we are... remembering Steve Mooring, a pioneer, as Natural E said, in the field of permaculture, and had a great impact on our area here, and very much in the positive. So we're remembering him today. And so we invite you, if you knew Steve, please give us a call at 816-931-5534. We're going to have people call in and share their memories. We're also going to maybe hear some more of Steve in his own words from his appearance back in July of 2016 about the Kansas Permaculture Tour. So, and we'll see. Maybe we'll find out where permaculture goes from here. But we've already got one caller. We've got Susan Jones on the line. Are you there, Susan?
I am, Mike. Good evening.
Good evening. So, so thanks for calling in, and you have something you wanted to share about Steve.
I do. Steve was an impatient visionary. He was impatient with things and folks that harmed Mother Earth. He rolled up his sleeves and he got things done. He spearheaded our local Jefferson County Food Council. Everyone on the county commission and the city council knew him. When he walked into a meeting, they knew that there was something to fix, to build, to do. Steve was the living embodiment of a mover and a shaker. He brought permaculture to Northwest Kansas, teaching, mentoring, working its vision. Steve's visionary heart was still strong when he died. It still pumps in many of us.
That's really great, Susan. That's really nice. I'm glad you were able to share that. I'm curious, so you worked with Steve. I know you were part of the permaculture tour, Kansas permaculture tour. What else are you involved in terms of permaculture, and where did you go?
Well, Steve and some of the rest of us formed the Kansas Permaculture Institute and the Kansas Permaculture Collaborative, but a couple of years ago, we came together and made ourselves official and did bylaws and all that. And he and I just worked closely together. I took his class about 9 years ago, and we've just been fast friends ever since. I actually met him at a straw bale workshop that I was helping to facilitate at Phil Holman Hebert's home. And he didn't know much about straw bale, and I'd never even heard of permaculture. So we shared knowledge with one another, and we worked side by side on many a project.
That's great. That's great. So he's going to be missed for sure by a lot of friends, but especially those in the. That are busy in the permaculture arena. So,
you know, it was interesting though, Mike, at his service out in the garden, there were people that I knew that weren't involved in those particular things. Mm-hmm. His reach went out into so many varied communities, and it was so obvious when we all came together to honor him that day that, like a Venn diagram, you know, the overlapping of his influence. And of course, he taught so many young ones as well as a few of us older ones. And
are you
yes.
Still? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for sharing. I think we have another caller on the line.
Mike, thanks for doing this tonight.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Take
care.
Bye. Bye-bye. KKFI, you're on the air, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
City, Kansas. And my name is Nancy.
Could I get you to repeat that? I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm calling from Baldwin City, well, rural Baldwin City, Kansas.
Okay.
And my name is Nancy.
Thank you.
And before I met Steve and took his class, and I'm not exaggerating, I never had a dog or a garden. And I come from a background of science, and Steve taught a class that kind of said, here's how the whole thing works. And I'd done a fair amount of different physical sciences, chemistry, one thing and the next, but never really biology. So he put it all together in a way that just fascinated me and made it something that might even be possible. So 5 years later, I'm on 33 acres with a cow and a calf and goats and lambies and gardens that use everything that I learned in the class. And I like to say that I get the award for the person that Steve changed the most, because I really went from zero to, I don't know, 50, 60, I wouldn't, maybe 55. But he really changed my life. And it was not just Steve, but it was Steve and Nancy together that they just opened their home and made things accessible. He was never so completely a purist that you had to be intimidated by everything. But when people would come out to my house, and he would bring some groups out every now and then to see what I was doing, and my theme was always, if I can do this, anybody can, because I really, really didn't know anything about it. So his class and Steve and Nancy just truly changed my life.
Well, it sounds like you got a dog now.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, I'm at a friend's house right now.
Oh.
That's not my dog. My dog is a guard dog who stays up all night and barks and keeps the chickens and the goats and the sheep all safe.
Mm.
Truth be told, that's not actually my dog.
Okay.
If you heard her, you would go, now that's a guard dog. He's got a very different bark.
So Nancy, what are some of the most valuable things you learned that, like, I mean, and you know, put yourself in that mind of where you were when you first started, and so it might have been something simple at the time.
I saw Joel Salatin at the Mother Earth News Fair a few years ago, two or three years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he was doing his preaching as he does best, and I actually read what started me on this whole thing was about 10 years ago, somebody handed me The Omnivore's Dilemma. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of just started this kind of interest from afar, and then was like, well, why should it be from afar? I think I'll take a class and see what happens. But what I told Joel Salatin, who I know people love or they hate, you know, but he's been a very passionate person about sustainable agriculture. And of course, what he says is that he grows grass. That's what he grows, and the quality of his grass then is has to do with the quality of his all of his livestock and everything, because he tends to this grass so meticulously, and the health of that grass. So I told Joel when I had a chance to speak to him, and I said, you know, you say that your product, your main what you grow is mainly grass. And I said, after taking my class, I'll tell you what I grow is microbes.
Mm.
And that was what just kind of, first thing I did was get red wiggler worms after Steve's class.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, maybe if I don't kill these, and in fact, I came close to killing them twice. Mm. So, you know, that's how far I had to come. But it, you know, it really occurred to me that the worms weren't eating the food. It was the microbes that were eating the food. And then, you know, the worms were eating the microbes. And so on my whole place, and I'm far, far, far from where I want to be, but what I think about is, how are the microbes doing? And that's really so much of what I got out of Steve's class.
That's great.
I'll tell you what I really got out of Steve's class.
Please do.
I'll tell you. So it never occurred to me that I would actually do this, but I was making a fairly good-sized life change, and I wanted to be involved in community, and I thought, what a great way to take this 14-week class, and I'm going to meet people who maybe think more like I do and who want to live more like I would like to live. And so I really went, the first thing that made me consider taking Steve's class was that I thought I might find community. And in fact, I just can't describe to you the community that was built around his classes, and then the Institute and all of the other things. So he taught me a lot for my brain to work on, but he also gave me community for my heart. And I really, really, really needed that. And I have to say again, that was Steve and Nancy that really pulled that together. So he changed my life. I'm grateful.
Well, that's great.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's exactly like the kind of thing when we open up the phone lines, that's the kind of thing we like to hear.
And I don't mind saying, should I say my last name? A lot of times I don't say my last name, but my last name is Boyda, Nancy Boyda. And sometimes people recognize that name.
Sure, we do.
So,
yeah.
Pardon?
Yeah, I recognize that name for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a huge life change, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And he was really instrumental in that.
Yeah.
So, namaste, Steve. Blessings. And, you know, he is very, very, very much still present and will continue to be. Yeah. So, thank you for having the show.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for calling in. Thank you for enriching the experience.
Yes.
Thank
you. All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, if people want to call in and share about Steve Mooring, in case you're just joining us, we're celebrating the life of Steve Mooring, at least his permaculture life and how he's touched people. We just heard from Nancy Boyda, who was a congressperson, right, from like the Topeka area, and if I'm remembering correctly. And so if you want to share, if you remember Steve Mooring, a giant who in the permaculture arena in our area, please give us a call, 816-931-5534. We're going to take our first break, and then we'll either hear from a caller or we'll hear from Steve in his own words. First this.
On the next Radioactive Magazine, Pastor Donna Simon of St. Mark Hope and Peace Church tells the story of her journey as a lesbian woman serving as a pastor for an urban Lutheran church. That's Radioactive Magazine, Tuesday at 6 p.m.
Did you know underwriting KKFI's programming spreads the word about your organization or event and supports KKFI at the same time? Learn more at kkfi.org/underwriting.
Jason Stanley.
Fascism thrives when it's contrasted with a version of capitalist liberal democracy, now often called neoliberalism. Fascism thrives when, as Hannah Arendt says, individuals are atomized and they don't have groups in which they can belong and identify.
Alternative Radio, Wednesday morning at 9.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In Northampton, Massachusetts, it's not unusual to see a cyclist hauling a trailer full of recycling, trash, or compost.
We don't have municipal trash and recycling pickup, so people either bring it themselves or hire big trash trucks, or they hire us.
That's Ellen Clegg, one of about 15 worker owners with the Pedal People Cooperative. Pedal People averages over 500 bike-powered trash pickups a week. They also offer other emission-free services, like grocery delivery and moving help. And they offer yard care, but instead of gas mowers and leaf blowers, they use old-fashioned push mowers, rakes, and scythes. And of course, they get to you by bike. Pedal People has been in business for 15 years, and in that time, Clegg thinks it set an example that helped expand Northampton's bike culture.
There are many more people who now are using more bikes in general, and people beginning to use smaller trailers and haul things themselves.
It can be hard work, but Clegg says it's worth it to help cut down on carbon pollution for the community and for the world. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
And you're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Eco Radio KC. And we do have another caller on the line. Caller, you are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Laura Vidal.
Seems like you faded out there.
Can you still hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you. Okay, sorry.
Okay.
All right, go ahead. What do you want to share with us about Steve?
Well, I just wanted to call and thank you so much for your show. For him, I found out today that you were doing this. And, you know, I appreciate that you're honoring his life in this way. I've been an apprentice with Steve since 2010 when I first took his class whenever he was teaching in Lawrence at the East Lawrence Community Building. And it was amazing. I remember I found out from a friend, Troy Carlin, who used to own All-in-One Landscaping, about permaculture. And he found out that I was interested in learning about sustainability and growing my own food and creating edible landscapes. And he told me that there's this guy in Lawrence named Steve Mooring that teaches these permaculture classes and that he had a class starting in about 4 days. So I got a hold of this Steve Mooring person and talked with him on the phone for a couple of minutes, and he told me a little bit about his class, and it was exactly what I was wanting to know at that time. And taking his class and getting to know him as a person really changed my life.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah. So I wanted to make sure that everybody knows that we are still teaching permaculture. A lot of us that took classes from Steve, a lot of his students, are part of the Kansas Permaculture Institute. And there is another class that's starting in spring. And if anybody is interested in taking the class, I would encourage you to go to our website, which is callpermaculture.org/education, or you can go to the permaculture.org website and just click on the tab that says education, and it has the list of classes and workshops that we keep updated there. There is a class at KU. If people are wanting KU credit, you can sign up there, get some more information, or if you're wanting to join one of the community-based classes, like I took, then there's also some information listed there. Classes are starting in late January, so we are taking enrollments now. There are some scholarship opportunities and some work trade opportunities, so we try to make it affordable and accessible for as many people as possible. I also wanted to say that here in Lawrence, we have a great community garden program, and it's called Common Ground. And Steve was the head designer for one of the gardens here called Permacommons. And it's at 1304 Pennsylvania Street here in Lawrence, Kansas, over on the east side of Lawrence. And I am one of the coordinators that makes that space available. And it is a permaculture demonstration site where people can come and volunteer, or they can become members to learn how to take care of fruit trees, how to learn about polyculture, taking care of annual and perennial food, producing plants, medicinal plants, herbs, and all in a polyculture system. It's a diverse plant system where we have many different things growing together, and it's a beautiful garden. So if anybody is interested in learning about that garden or coming by for a tour or joining, they can also contact me, Laura Odell, and my email address is lodell01@gmail.com. And we also have a Facebook page where you can get a hold of us as well.
What's the Facebook page?
Facebook page, if you search PermaCommons, and it's P-E-R-M-A, Commons, C-O-M-M-O-N-S, Lawrence, Kansas.
Okay.
Yeah, and the Kansas Permaculture Collaborative also has a Facebook page, a great Facebook page that was just redesigned, so I encourage people to check that out, too. There is a great community of people that surrounded Steve, and I just wanted everyone to know that we're continuing his work.
Thank you very much. I've posted links that you've shared with us on our Eco Radio Facebook page so our listeners can access that, what you've shared with us. So thank you very much.
Great. Thank you for doing this. Well, good night.
Absolutely.
All right. And we do have another caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where you're calling from?
Oh, caller, what's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Loretta, and I'm calling from Leavenworth County.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for calling in. What do you have to share?
Well, our little homestead was on the permaculture tour this year, and I'll just never forget the words that Steve said when, you know, he kind of left our place. He was teasing me, but we're a military family here in Leavenworth, and he loved what we were doing on our homestead, a lot of it, but he teased me that he thought we had lots of lines, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the permaculture world is all about mimicking the wildness and like forest planting. And we did attend classes from Steve as well on food forests. So we did, you know, we're trying all that, but I guess we're all at different stages. And, you know, he understood that and very accepting of that, and just teased me a little bit about all of our lines. But, you know, our place, too, is just yet another extension of Steve's legacy. I heard Nancy talking about Steve talking about microbes and her red wigglers.
Mm.
And I've actually been to Nancy's homestead, and she's been to mine because of the connection of Steve. And I think when Steve, might have been when he first got sick, he asked if I was interested in getting his red wigglers. So I actually have many huge tubs of worms from Steve now. So we'll have much gratitude for him for the fertility on our place, for, you know, for those red wigglers that we got from Steve. So, and then one other area that we're really grateful to Steve too was the sense of community. But Steve was so science based, you know, and but then there was that other side of him where he had a deep faith as well, and he really encouraged me a lot in trying to, you know, have the language to talk about the therapeutic healing of gardens and the spirituality that could be wrapped around it. I mean, he was even, you know, remembered. He has, you know, a healing garden that really inspired me. And anyhow, he was just a big supporter of mine, you know, to encourage me that this is, you know, science is not really in conflict with some of these ideas of spirituality, and that it can be, it's an important part of who we are. So, you know, I just really appreciated that about him, and, you know, and just also very, very grateful for the community-mindedness that he had and how he was able to bring us all together from all walks of life.
Well, that's great. I really appreciate you calling in to share.
Thank you.
Yeah, and if anyone else wants to share, the number is 816-931-5534. And we're going to hear from Steve in his own words right now. So thanks to everyone for calling in, and keep calling in.
816-931-5534.
Well, let's start a little bit about with you guys. Why don't you tell us each a little bit about yourself?
And say your name first so people know who's talking.
I'm Steve Mooring, and I've been studying permaculture probably for close to 20 or so years. I moved from California back in the late 90s and bought a farm, and I've been transforming that into a permaculture demonstration site, and I've been very active in doing that, and I've also been active in trying to, you know, educate our community about what permaculture is all about. And so I teach a permaculture design course, and have also helped establish the Kansas Permaculture Collaborative and Institute. And Bill and Joe are here with me. They're also members of the Collaborative and Institute, and they all have their special roles. So I'll pass it over to, I guess, Joe.
Before we pass it to Joe, we're just going to go to another segment here with Steve. If call in with your reflections, 816-931-5534. We're celebrating Steve Mooring, who passed away about a week and a half ago.
What do you mean by stacking functions?
Okay. Well, maybe why don't I turn it over to Steve, and he can talk about that.
Basically, stacking functions is what you do is when you analyze an ecological system, you focus on various elements. Now, an element can be an apple tree, it can be an oak tree, it could be a big rock sitting out in the middle of the field. And you try to analyze how that rock or that tree functions in the environment, and you know, what animals rely on it, you know, what it produces, what functions it has. And so what we try to do is we try to bring together a series of elements in such a way that they benefit each other in that little microhabitat. And in other words, you might add extra mulch around the bottom of the tree to attract fungus, which actually supports the root system of the tree. You might put other plants in it that bring up nutrients from deep within the soil and then form a natural mulch. And then bring in plants that maybe attract certain insects, pollinators, or attract predator insects that'll, you know, take care of some of your pests. And then one thing that I do a lot, I have a food forest on my property, is I plant species that actually fix nitrogen. So we take all those functions and kind of pack them together, stack them in the environment to produce a positive effect. And we see, I've been able to see this quite dramatically.
Really?
And we're going to jump into another segment with Steve, but we'd like to hear from you. Those of you who knew Steve, want to share your reflections on Steve Mooring, pioneer in permaculture here in this part of the country, 816-931-5534. Here's more.
All right. Is there anything else we haven't really said about permaculture? Well, I mean, at least on a basic level?
Well, on a basic level, you look at the basic ethical tenets of permaculture. It's just a different way of looking how we live and interact with the environment, our social systems, how we take care of each other. There are three main ethics in permaculture: taking care of the planet, taking care of the soil, taking care of the water systems, taking care of the biodiversity in a given ecosystem or the whole planet. The second tenet or ethic is going to be, you know, care for each other, providing enough abundance to share with each other. And then the third tenet is fair share, not with just our human species, but everything else that lives on the planet. So I won't say it's a new way of thinking, but it's a more connected way of thinking. And then there's one last tenet that's sometimes talked about. This is understanding the limits to resources, limits to excess. And sometimes I talk about, you know, how we may deal with the future. You know, the human population, I sometimes use the analogy as, you know, being wine, being yeast introduced into a grape juice or a wine juice must carboy. And then they first get in there, everything's wonderful, plenty of resources, population grows, and then they start noticing, well, we have a little pollution here, and we might want to have to deal with this. But of course, they never pay any attention to that. Pretty soon, all the resources, which is the sugar, it disappears, and all this pollution, which is alcohol, Mm-hmm. It gets more and more, and then pretty soon there's a big die-off. And so in permaculture, we acknowledge that, and we try to raise consciousness so people will begin to think of ways that they can become more sustainable, produce less of an impact on the planet, have a smaller ecological footprint, and basically consume less and share more.
So is permaculture an ideal you strive for, or are you practicing permaculture if you're attempting permaculture?
Well, it's a paradigm of thinking. It's also a design science for integrating and working with nature as opposed to against nature. So it's a practice, it's a philosophy, it's a way of looking at things. And in some respects, it might even be a moral imperative for some folks.
So
we're going to jump in again before we get to the next segment. We'd like to hear from you if your life was touched by Steve Mooring. Then we'd like to hear from you, 816-931-5534. We are going to get another segment in. So this, what we're hearing is when Steve, along with Joe Fowley and Bill Price, were on the Eco Radio KC program here at KKFI back in July of 2016, and that's what we're listening to. So we're going to hear more of that, and then we'll probably be ready for our next break after that.
Okay, Steve, why don't you tell us about the Kansas Permaculture Institute?
Well, it's interesting. Probably it was 2006 and 2007. I became more and more interested in integrating permaculture into my life. And, I was surfing the Internet, and I came across a group of people up in Wisconsin that had established a permaculture collaborative. And I thought, that's an interesting concept. And, you know, I'm kind of a one-man band here, it seemed, at the time. And, of course, I ran into other people who were interested in permaculture. And I thought, well, why don't we, you know, work together, form a synergistic effort, and learn from each other? So I, you know, got a few people together. We talked about it. And I established a listserv, and that's a Google group listserv. It's called KPC-DEV. And that's simply as a listserv works, you know, people could, you know, write in, ask questions, interact, share things that they pull off the Internet about permaculture or anything sustainable. And then we just started a dialogue. That listserv grew and grew, and now it's up to about, you know, 260 members all through the Kansas City and Lawrence and eastern Kansas area. And a few years later, we set up a website called the Kansas Permaculture. It's called, the website's kapermaculture.org. It's all one word. And that's kind of a centerpiece for us to also get information out, share information. And then I think it was about 2010 we established the Institute. And the Institute was basically to help support people who went through a permaculture design course, so that their certification would be recorded, and that we'd also set up some guidelines for people to teach permaculture. I started teaching permaculture in late 2009. I have a background in natural sciences. I have a master's degree in biochemistry, and I'm also have experience teaching science in the community colleges here in the Kansas City area, Johnson County Community College as well. And I just thought, well, this would be a perfect opportunity to share some of my skills with my community. So this has been going on. We've been teaching the permaculture design course now for, about six years now. And I teach it also at KU as a course in the environmental studies program. It's a 6-hour credit course.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm curious, so this all seems to be like very grassroots, an overused term, but it seems very appropriate to hear what we're talking about. Like, is the concept of permaculture, is that on like the state of Kansas's radar? Like, state, is there any state agency that's even looking about it or caring about it, or is it that underground? Or,
well, I don't think it's really underground. I went to a lecture by what's his first name? Chris Brown in the environmental studies program at KU. He gave a lecture on sustainability in general, and I attended the lecture, and we met at that time, and we started a dialogue about permaculture. I later met him at the Prairie Festival that next fall, and I told him about my course, and he said, well, why don't you teach it at KU? And so I'm going to offer the course for the fifth time this fall, and it's been a real big hit. And the students just love it, and it involves classroom instruction, but about a third of it is actually getting out there into the field, getting your fingers dirty, making compost piles, taking walks through the woods, seeing examples of water catchment systems and, you know, solar systems for water heating and photovoltaics, and just about, and styles of, natural building and building materials, from anything from passive solar to cob and a straw bale and so on. And anyway, the students seem to really enjoy participating in the class. And
what's that sound, you ask? It's the sound of one-time-use trash. People get bottled water because of hydration, convenience, and the claim of better taste and quality. Truth is, there's usually no difference between bottled and tap water. The healthier choice is to get a cool, reusable bottle made of lined aluminum, steel, glass, or special plastic that won't break off chemical bits like the plastic used in disposable bottles. Get healthy and keep your world from becoming a big junk pile. Disposables dead. Brought to you by J.C. Herman High School and 90.1 FM KKFI.
Women's Agenda 21, Environmental Demands for the 21st Century, on Wings, Saturday at 2:30.
Did you know, underwriting KKFI's programming spreads the word about your organization or event and supports KKFI at the same time? Learn more at kkfi.org/underwriting.
A Pond of Dreams, on this current cast. Unity Island sits in the Niagara River in Buffalo, New York. At its northern tip is a man-made deep water pond. Ecologist Andrew Hannes is with the Army Corps of Engineers. He says the area does not support wildlife, but that's about to change thanks to a restoration project that will turn the pond into a coastal wetland habitat. The project includes removing invasive species like purple loosestrife and mugwort, and filling the pond with 50,000 cubic yards of clean sediment.
And then starting next spring, we're going to get in there and plant it with native wetland vegetation.
He expects to see plenty of amphibians, turtles, frogs, and birds enjoying their lush new digs. After all,
once you build it, they will come.
Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
And we are back here in the studio. We do have another caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Kara Schuster, and I'm calling from Lawrence.
Great.
So I've known Steve for a very long time. He's always been a very, very important person to me, and he's always been a very important person to a lot of people, it seems. It's so wonderful to hear everybody share so many feelings that I've also shared about Steve. He just had this, you know, real strong personality, and, you know, he really wanted to make a difference and do something in his community and bring people together. But he also, he didn't want to back down from doing that either. And I just think that that is so important in our world today. And hearing his voice in the past shows and hearing the things that other people have shared, just it's really touching, and it's really moving. And I'm so grateful to have known him. And his stepdaughter has been my best friend for a very long time. So I've known Steve for about 22 years or so. I never had a father myself, and so he really kind of took that place in a lot of ways, and he taught me more than permaculture. I did take his class from him, and he was the person that taught me how to do those things in the permaculture world, but also just, you know, being a very strong presence and you know, his ability to bring the communities together was just really amazing. And I was, a couple of years ago, I came across something new that I hadn't been privy to before that tied into permaculture, and that was green cemetery management. And I remember setting a meeting with Nancy and Steve, and I wanted to talk to them about this new concept that I was really interested in. And so I went out to the farm, and I talked to them about, you know, green cemeteries and natural burial and alternative death care and home funerals and all of these new things that I was learning about. And I was so grateful that they were both so supportive of me trying this new adventure. And it was, I just remember like really wanting to make sure that both Nancy and Steve were going to support this new idea of mine, and, you know, really hoping that Steve was going to be interested and maybe even proud of something that I could tie into permaculture and this, you know, new thing. And anyway, I was just really grateful that he was supportive of that, and I was able to help the family create this really unique experience to help send Steve off. And I have to say it was, you know, really one of the most magical weekends that I've ever shared with that family of all the years that I've known them. And I'm just really grateful that we were able to celebrate Steve's life and honor his death in such a beautiful way. And I really hope that he appreciated it, because I really felt his presence there, and I know he was still with us. So anyway, I really am grateful that you did the show, and that's all I have to share. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate that.
Yes, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And I think we've got one time for maybe one more snippet of Steve on the program before Natural E brings us the calendar of events. So let's hear this one more clip from Steve.
Yeah, that's great. So do you have like good response at these potlucks?
Well, I'd say in the general sense, we do. We've been doing these probably for at least 6 or 7 years. And sometimes we have a big showing, sometimes we have a small showing. And other things we do besides just a potluck, we have an activity called a permablitz.
Wow.
And where somebody, some farm owner or somebody in the urban environment have a project that requires a little bit more manpower than they have in their family, or expertise, or sometimes even some machinery, we get together, organize this permablitz, which is a group of people. It could be anywhere from 5 people to 30 people. And we'll come in and we'll, you know, dig up an area and put in mulch beds, put in a water catchment system. Or we did this a few years ago where we built a community garden in 4 different sessions, in 4 different permablitzes. And it went from just a bare lot to a full implemented garden. And so that was quite an success. And we've done other ones on a friend's farm where we planted trees, but then we got together and we actually explored some really valuable, I guess, ethical and moral things that we talked about bringing people together as a community, so that they can be really positive, these meetings. But we found that any kind of meeting that we're involved in, one important thing is to share food, share stories, and act as a family, act as a community.
Wow, yeah, that's great.
All right, and we do have another caller. You're on the air, and where are you calling from, and who are you?
Hi, this is Nancy Mooring.
Hi, Nancy.
I'm Sarah Thomas, and I'm Steve's wife, and this is Steve's daughter, and we're calling from Vajra Farm, Steve's beloved farm and home.
Well, thank you for checking in.
Yes, well, Steve, first and foremost, was a lover. He loved life. He loved his family. He loved his family of friends. He loved the earth. He loved animals and plants, and he loved everything. And he shared so much with me. I have to say, I just learned so much in my life from Steve. And he was a son of Brad and Eloise Mooring, and one of seven kids, and his father was an army colonel and doctor, and they grew up all around the world, but his dad always would have a garden in the backyard. So the kids learned gardening from their dad, and Steve just loved to garden. So Steve worked in the biotech industry in California for over 20 years, and we decided to move back to Kansas, my hometown, because my mother was elderly, and we bought our farm, and he named it Vajra Farm, and he said that Vajra means diamond-like, pristine, immutable, pure, and he wanted to have an organic farm. So his spirituality as a Tibetan Buddhist and a Vedantist, that Vajra was a very meaningful word for him. So we named it Vajra Farm, and he was gardening for a number of years, and then one day he says, I'm going to go to Wisconsin for 10 days and take a permaculture class. And I said, honey, you know how to garden? Mm-hmm. And he says, oh, no, I've got to do this. This is just the most wonderful thing. And I said, well, okay, I'll keep the home fires burning, and you go take permaculture. So he came back, and, oh, my goodness, it transformed his life. And I think it transformed a few other people's lives as well. And Steve and I just love people, and we have just loved sharing Vajra Farm, and we will continue to do so. He loves all of you, and he thanks all of you. And as Kara Schuster just said, it was the most magical weekend last weekend with all Steve's siblings, all family, and my family, and all family of friends, and the four dogs and the four cats, of course, and he was organic to the end, and we just will go forward and try to carry on his beautiful vision. And I'll let Sarah say a word about her life with Steve.
Hello.
Hi.
As Kara mentioned, Steve's been my stepfather for about 22 years, and he and my mother actually dated back in the 70s in Lawrence, but ended up splitting up, and both married other people, had kids with other people, and then divorced, got back together, and had a long-distance relationship between California and Kansas for a period of time before Mom moved out there for a while, just about 20 minutes south of San Francisco, Moss Beach, two blocks from the ocean, beautiful, beautiful place that Steve had out there. So Mom moved out there, and I joined about a year later, first time I ever moved out of Kansas, and lived there with Steve and his daughter, Serena, my stepsister. And, of course, I took advantage of going up to San Francisco every chance I got. But as someone else mentioned at the memorial, actually, Steve had a beautiful glass greenhouse out back there. And that really was the beginning of, you know, what I saw, what would evolve into his grand vision. At any rate, they moved back, like Mom said, but I was, the weekend was profoundly beautiful, and I think it was everything that Steve possibly could have wanted. I was so grateful to have Kara there with us. Kara and I had taken a bit of the death midwife course together. She'd asked me to pursue it with her, and I'd considered being a funeral director myself because I'd be fourth generation in our family of funeral directors. but realized that it's a growing area, and so Kara decided to pursue it on her own, and she took the initiative and took the whole course anyway, and I found a job at the visual art department at KU. But Kara and I had that background together, so getting to carry out Steve's wishes and just the way everything came together so organically and beautifully. Steve was a Buddhist, and so he wanted to
to be laid out for 3 days at his home. And so we got a religious exemption in order to be able to have him there without being without being embalmed. It was really lovely. His brother Greg put together three beams that Steve had already in a teepee kind of structure, carried it over. Greg and Carrie and I stood up each leg and made this tripod over where Steve lay and decorated it with all of the natural prairie grasses and everything that he loved so much and meant so much to him. We just all gathered together and shared memories and, did rituals that were meaningful to us. We had Tibetan prayer flags, which we got from a dear friend, Claire Doveton, an artist here in town who took Steve's course as well. She happened to have them, so that was very meaningful that she gave them to us. She also had sand from a mandala that the Tibetan monks had done that my mother sprinkled around him. And she had mala prayer beads that had been blessed, so we had those laying on Steve's chest and had those cremated with him as well. So I just feel really lucky to have had Steve in my life for as long as I did, and I was very, very proud of him, proud of his intelligence and his drive and his passion and he just was so competent, and he was an excellent researcher, which I greatly appreciated, and always would, he saved my mom's mother's vision, my grandmother's vision. She had macular degeneration, and the doctor said, there's nothing that can be done, but Steve researched, and he found this treatment that saved her eyes.
Wow.
And we love him.
Yeah, we're going to have to leave it on that note. We're going to have to make room for the other folks to come in the studio. But we do appreciate your comments. And we're not going to have time for the calendar, but we'll get that up on Eco Radio KC's Facebook page. So we're just going to go out here with, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll do a couple more excerpts from Steve, and we'll go out with that. Program that way. Thank you so much for everyone for making this such a special program. Stay tuned for Fiesta Musical.
Well, Steve probably has the history, so he's probably the best to get started on that.
Well, it was fairly simple. We thought, well, first of all, I had a number of students who had projects, and I thought, well, why don't we just string a bunch of these together on a weekend? We go visit I forget his first name, Maynard. Pete Maynard up in Leavenworth. He had living on a farm with his wife and his father and mother-in-law, and they wanted to do something different. So we decided we would go visit their farm. The next place was in the tour was to visit another woman who has a farm that wanted to do a permaculture project. She put in a small food forest. Well, actually, it wasn't all that small, but and then the next place in the tour was to go to another farm, and then in subsequent years we branched out to have two full days. We did the urban part first on the Saturday, and then the rural or farm part on the Sunday following, and so that became really interesting. So we have about 12 different demonstration sites. Of course, we can't do them all, so we kind of rotate from year to year, from the different, to tour the different sites. And I'll let Bill talk a little bit about it because his farm's been one of them.
Thank you guys so much for coming in, and it sounds like you got an exciting weekend planned. Do you guys? I mean, like you guys are really like at the vanguard of a lot of this, but yet I'm getting the impression that you're still learning as well. Is that a fair assessment?
That's pretty accurate. My goal in this whole thing is just to get people more aware of what permaculture offers, get people teaching it, get people sharing ideas, collaborating, and also developing a career path. If people want to teach, they want to consult. All those possibilities are there. If people actually want to get into a food production system and make a success of it, that's also possible.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.